was watching or reading a blog the other day. I was doing some research for something and reading through some blogs about their commenting on different pastors and stuff. And one guy was, they started making fun of this one pastor who spelled a word wrong on the board when he was writing. It's kind of like, really? You're going to go there? It's like, they're just trying to just discredit everything he did because he spelled the word wrong. It's kind of like, well, it's done. I mean, if you want to, if anybody's paying attention, just. So it's just kind of, it was kind of funny. So I said, check and see if I got anything spelled wrong. Because right here, you put it on the board. You ever see me do that? You know, you write a word on the board and you spell it wrong, and I just keep right on going. And there's those that are in the class that they can't take their eye off the misspelled word. It's like, I hear nothing that you say for the next 10 minutes because it's like, look, that word is spelled wrong. So sometimes it's better not to just, or like I do, I just scribble, you know. Yeah, it's like, some people don't even notice it's spelled wrong, but some people, they just, the class is over. That word spelled wrong. Can we fix the word, you know? So, yeah, it's like, any questions? Yeah, 30 minutes ago you spelled that word wrong. Can you fix it? It's like, okay. No, I can't fix it. Otherwise, we would have spelled it right the first time. Okay. Well, hey, we're in Ecclesiastes, and what we're doing right now, I hope to come back and read through it verse by verse again and teach through it. But we're still kind of doing an outline. I've got up to, I think, probably right around chapter... I just started chapter 5 talking about the religious experience, and I want to kind of finish the book up and go through this. But here's some points that I think are important. At least, like I said last week, there's different ways of approaching this book, and that doesn't mean that they're right or wrong. It just means that there's probably different levels. And as I'm going through this, I'm going to be hitting off of one particular level of the book. You could come back and look at it from a different angle and see more material there, because there's a lot of things in this book. I think, as we look at this, the thing I put up here, the guy is devoted to study. Solomon, who's writing this, or the teacher who's putting this together, the one who calls the assembly, he's devoted to study, but not everything is knowable. And that's kind of the point of the book. If you look, and I got these verses written down here, chapter 1, verse, let's say 12. I'm going to go through this a little different order here in this first chapter, just put these into perspective. But his point is that, not necessarily in the chronological order, but his point early in the book here in the chapter 1 is, I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study. So he's not like, you know, saying how great he was. That's not his point. But he is saying, hey, I've spent some time looking at this thing. I devoted myself to study. And right there, that's a point right there. This is not the first time I've thought about this. And to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. Now, again, that's a very wide category, but that's going to get him into trouble. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. And why is he saying that? Well, he said, I've studied everything under heaven, and I've looked, and there are things that he's going to end up pointing out here. Like I said last week, he understood the plant life. He understood the economics. He understood all of these things, but he gets to a place where it's like, there are some things that I can't figure out. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. In other words, you get out there into some areas that you have no answer for. Consider the area of the soul. I mean, you got to think about guys like Freud, you know, who went in and tried to understand the mind, how the intellect works. Again, not that Freud is right or wrong, but he's messing with some things. It's like, how do you test this? He's trying to figure out, and it's like, even when he gets done, there's another theory comes along beside it. And you got to imagine that Solomon was dealing with that very thing. As he was trying to figure out things, he gets to places like, there's no way of measuring this. Or you even, when did time begin, or how will time end? It's beyond measurement. And so, everything, as that works its way back in, if you get too far out, then we can understand how to measure certain things, how to measure and square up a house, if we're going to build a house, how to hook up our internet. We can figure those things out. But as you start going further and further, pretty soon, that emptiness, or that the inability to find things that are hidden from mankind, eventually work their way back into the things we do understand. And the things we did understand, and that you can hear that in philosophy. Well, we've made a house that is a good house, it's a square house. It's like, how do you know it's square? Good point. because of, in this little world right here, I had a square, I had a tape measure, that house is built right. But if you get too far out here, it's like, how do you know we're not upside down? It's like, I don't know. And you can get to a place where philosophy just begins to unravel everything. And so in verses 12 through, let's go ahead in verse 15. I'll leave that for now. But 12 and 13, he's saying, I have studied and I've seen everything. There are some things I know. But then he would go back to the beginning of the book, verse 2. He says, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. And again, this is not necessarily an ideal of hopelessness, that there's no meaning to life. He knows there's a God, and he's very clear in the book that there's a purpose, there's a system. In fact, I've got it referred to down here. There is a game going on. There is something someone's keeping score. But the problem is, it's not what you're keeping score of. He's going to talk about money, riches, lifetime, experiences. It's like, how's this? It's like, right, you know, this person's winning if this is the game. If we're playing a game of Monopoly, you just won. But that's not real money. That's not real life. Now, in the real world, you step outside. But if your life is just involved, our lives are like a board game. We're playing on this board. We see this. I won. I rolled double sixes. Yay. Right. But let's step up away from the board and look around. It's like, oh, yeah, this board game has nothing to do with your reality. And some people are going to be like, here, life is a test, but he's going to talk about this. Life is a game, but it's not the game that you see. Many people are playing the game, but it's like at the end of life, when you go into eternity and everything is pulled back, and those things that we can't see, those things we can't find, we can't measure, all of a sudden we're in that reality. You realize, I lived my whole life like it was a board game. Exactly. And you have got nothing. And this is the teacher who's devoted to study. And he understands this board game. He understands this board game. But then he steps back a little further, begins to realize, wait, there's a bigger game going on, that when you understand that I don't have no idea what this game is, you realize that these board games, how much money you make, it's really meaningless. How long you live, it doesn't really matter. It's like all these things you accomplish, the things you enjoy, we're not keeping score with that. That's where he says here at the beginning of the book, meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless. What does a man gain from all of his labor at which he toils under the sun? Now, we can, you know, as a father, as a teacher at school, we reinforce the work ethic. You work, you get what you put into it. In athletics, what you put in is what you get out. But he's saying right here, right, coach. The kid lifted weights all summer so he'd be ready to play football. You won the conference. You went on to play in the qualified for the football playoffs, or you went and played at the Uni Dome or whatever in Iowa. It's like, but what does it really matter? It's like, oh, yeah, I guess it really doesn't matter. All the work you put into football, you played some games, now you graduate, and now you're into real life. It's like, so that was just, well, you can go back as a teacher, well, that was good work ethic. You learned how to practice, learned how to work. But it's like he's saying, what does it really matter? Even your whole life. Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun sets, and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south, the north, the streams flow, but the sea is never full. The eye never has as full of seeing. It's like what we're devoted to study, but we don't know everything. No matter how far you study, you're going to get to the place of saying, I don't know. Well, maybe I need to study a little more. You've just entered an area where you can't study this. You can't test this. You can't do research on this. This is outside the realm of human knowledge. And that's the concept here. Is he is saying mankind is limited to his experience. You can measure what's in the box. You can play the game that you see in the box. You can be successful in the box, but there's a day coming where you're going to realize there's a bigger world outside the box. And everything you did in that box, if you don't have the right perspective, it's meaningless. Now, he is going to talk about judgment coming, and we'll get back into that here a little bit. Now, in verse 15, in the verses like say 2 through 11, he's saying he's just listing all the things that are meaningless. It never really gets done. Then in verses 12 through 13 and 14, he says, "But I am the one who is qualified to say this because I have studied more than anyone. I've excelled more than anyone. I've been there and I've seen what I cannot know." So I'm coming back to tell you this, verse 15. What is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. And you say, well, that doesn't make sense. Right. You're going to get to a place where it's like, how can we measure this? It's not there. You can't measure. Well, yeah, it's there. Well, it's there, but you can't touch it. And so you, if it's not there, you can't count it. If it's twisted, it can't be straight. It's just designed that way by God. You're not God. You're going to, and here's what it's coming down to. You're a creature created by God to live in this box and honor Him in this box, but you're not God. God is always outside. God's reality is always bigger. So you're going to be very frustrated in life if you're going to devote yourself to study and figure everything out. Because eventually you're going to hit the buzzsaw where it's like, this doesn't make sense. If you let that affect you, if you think you can figure everything out and all of a sudden you get that place in life where you hit the buzzsaw, it's going to vibrate back into every area of your life. And the things you thought you understood in the box, the games that you have been playing and you've been keeping score of, all of a sudden you're going to realize no one's counting money in eternity. No one's counting state championships in eternity. No one's counting how long you lived. And it's like all those things that I was racking up saying, I think I've got this figured out. It's like there's nothing there. So you better, the idea here, I think, is to understand that there's things we do not know. We do the best we can with what we understand, but realize this is going to fade away. I mean, it lines up with Jesus' teaching, Paul's teaching, the general understanding of the Scriptures. Okay. Now from there, let's just read the last verse in verse 18 of chapter 1. So his point, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow, the more knowledge, the more grief. If you can just convince yourself life is a game board, stay in the box, win your Monopoly game, win your state championship, make your money, live, and he's going to say that eventually. He says there's nothing else for a man to do than live, I'm paraphrasing, is live in the box, enjoy his work, enjoy his food, and get a good night's sleep. Because once you step out of that box, you don't know what's going on out here. But in the box, make sure you honor God, do what's right, and enjoy the vain life that God gave you. In other words, those days, you know, those snowy days in the winter when you'd sit around, you couldn't go anywhere, and you'd play board games as a kid. I can't stand board games. I don't like board, but I used to play them, you know, all the time. Would love playing Monopoly. You probably the same with you. But I'm to the, again, not that I'm good or bad or smart or dumb or whatever, but I do not want to waste my time rolling dice on a board, moving this little piece around. And it's not because I'm a brilliant scholar. I just don't like it. But I do miss those days where I could spend all afternoon rolling a dice, moving around, and getting excited or being upset or being involved in this board game. Now, I don't need the game to entertain me. Life is complicated enough. When you're 12 years old, I need a challenge. I don't need a board game to challenge me. Get the board game out of here. I'm just trying to make it until tomorrow. Okay? I mean, so life is a game enough. But the same thing is true here today, is you start getting out here too far, you need to step back and re-engage what you're designed for. You are designed for not a board game, but you're designed to live a life in this box. Don't get so stretched out, because he's going to talk several times about basically relax and enjoy your life. Relax and go back and play the board game and interact with people, live honorably, play the game like it's by the rules and enjoy it, because there's nothing else for you. That is man's lot, is to live that board game. Okay, so in other words, verse 18, with much wisdom comes much sorrow. You start getting too far away from the board game and start trying to figure out things that you can't. Again, we're not talking about being dumb. This is not an anti-academic book. It's a book to realize you can't go there. You don't know what's out there. Okay, chapter 2. Again, we're trying to run through this and paraphrase this. He's going to go through several things in chapter 2, verse 1. I thought in my heart, come now, I'll test you with pleasure. Verse 4, I undertook great projects. Hey, verse 10, I denied myself nothing. In other words, he's out trying to experience all these things, and he's realizing that in the process of denying himself nothing, if it's projects, if it's pleasure, playing everything he can in that box, you know, the board game of life, everything you can get your hands on, he still did not find full understanding. I mean, he played every game, but at the end, he always realized there's something out there that I don't know. It goes back to this. First, he devotes himself to study and realizes, I can't learn everything. Okay, well, I will try everything. And at the end of all the projects, of all the pleasures, of going everywhere, seeing everything that can be seen, I wonder if he went down and saw the pyramids. You know what I'm saying? They were there that time. Did Solomon go down to Egypt and see the pyramids? I mean, I just threw that in there. But at the end of all those projects, he says again, Verse 10, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. This is not talking about sin. I mean, people, oh, look how wicked he was. Because you think, well, if I deny myself no pleasure, he's going to go off and do all kinds of sin. No, he's trying to go everywhere, see everything. Not necessarily, we're not talking about sin any more than study. What are you studying? Are you studying immoral things? Are you studying in witchcraft or something? It's like he's studying. He's researching. He's traveling. He's trying to see the pyramids. He's trying to go everywhere and test everything. My heart took delight in all of my work, meaning I put myself into my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, which he was toiling to achieve was to find and understand everything, everything he found was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the earth. In other words, I find myself, I'm right back in the box playing the board game. I've been there, I've seen it, I still got some questions that I can't explain. So then he turns in verse 12. He goes on and says this. He says, chapter 2, verse 12, I turn my thoughts to consider wisdom, which is also madness and folly, realizing the vanity of things. What more can a king's successor do than what has already been done? Meaning, we're just on this, again, like this treadmill I was referring to. So, if I'm doing it, it's already been done. If I'm testing it, it's already been tested. If I've reached the limits of man's understanding, it's already been reached. Verse 17, so I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. In other words, here, he's popped his head up out of the box or out of the foxhole. He's looking around the room at other things besides the board game. And he says, this is nothing but a game. It's meaningless to me. Now he says, my life is grievous. He's going to come back to this and say, part of this is you've got to stay disciplined. You've got to realize that you're a creature. You're living this life under the sun on this planet, that there is a God who's bigger and created things beyond your understanding. So you can look at all that and say, it's just meaningless. It's grievous. It's just a chasing after the wind. Or you can discipline yourself and say, okay, now that I understand that, get back in place, because he's going to talk about enjoying life eventually. Halfway through verse 17, all this is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all things I had toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to one who comes after me. Okay, I've got all this accumulated, built all these projects. Like, oh, wait, I'm going to die. So go all that experience, all I went skiing here, and I went sailing over here, and I went skydiving here, and I went swimming there. I've seen the whole world. It's like, whoa, now I'm going to die. It's like, so how did that, you just won the game of Monopoly. It's like, I landed on all the property. I own Boardwalk. It's like, right, and we're putting the game away now. It's like, but I own Boardwalk. It doesn't really exist. It's a game. It's like, and so what he's saying, I think, again, this is me paraphrasing, all of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because he had all that Monopoly money, say, because I must leave them to one who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. There's things coming. Again, now we're talking about things. I don't know what's going to happen after me. I mean, my own sons, how are they going to be? What are my grandchildren going to be like? I mean, those are just, it's like, what's going to happen? And so now he's feeling frustrated. So now in verse 24, he sums this up. I think he's bringing it back to, he's not a secular humanist. He's not an atheist. He is a realist who realizes he is limited. He's studying, he's experiencing, but he's trying to find that balance of like, wait a minute, I'm hitting these walls that I can't go beyond my human ability. So here's it, and I think this is a disciplined, wise conclusion. Verse 24. Okay, understand, you've got to play the board game. Okay, if you're not playing the board game, there's a problem. If you're not living life in that box, you're in denial. We are alive. We are in this game on earth. We've got to make money. We've got to have a career. We've got to take care of the people we're responsible for. We've got to meet our daily responsibilities. Now, if you push that, it's like, yeah, but we're all just going to die. It doesn't mean anything. Correct. So you got to get this balanced. It does mean something because God has assigned you to this. God has said, play the board game. But it's just a board game. We're all going to die. We're not going to get to keep anything. We're going to put it back in a box, and it's gone. Okay, you want to live that way and become a philosopher of a vain philosophy? You're just going to give up and find meaning? Watch this. Verse 24. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in His work. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without Him, who can eat or find enjoyment? Do you understand what I think He's saying there? In other words, if you want to philosophize this thing into just oblivion, it's like it's all meaningless. You've just philosophized the existence of God away. But if you bring this back and put this in perspective, there is a Creator. He knows way more than we do. He's created this universe. He's placed you as a creature in it and given you responsibilities. You're going to have to keep breathing air in and out. Whose idea was that? That I have to breathe air in and out of my lungs every day of my life. My heart's got to keep... Can't we make a better model? I'm sure iPhone's a better model than I'm designed. And it's like, can't we do better? But my heart's got to keep beating. I've got to eat every day. I've got to sleep. What, have you ever thought about that? How dumb is sleep? I know we need sleep, but it's like, well, half my life, I just check out, I'm unconscious, half my life. It's like, now who designed this model? You can charge your iPhone up while you're talking on it. You can still be recharging your cell phone while you're using it. But me, I've got to be completely unfunctioning. And then when I wake up, it's like, I don't want to get up. It's like, but we're designed that way. You get frustrated, or you just face the fact, this understanding that I'm trying to say, or that he's trying to present, I think, this too, I see, is from the hand of God. If you'll understand this, he's out there, you're in his creation. He's designed you to breathe in and out, your heart beats, you've got to eat, you've got to sleep, you've got responsibilities. You can call it vanity if you want to, or you can realize God has created you and placed you here, and now we're getting that idea of the fullness of Christ, that He is the Creator, and Paul talks about the fullness of Christ, and now you can begin to understand, okay, I'm here, so I'm going to enjoy my time on the mountains. I'm going to enjoy my time at work. I'm going to enjoy my time eating my food. I'm going to enjoy my time sleeping, and I'm going to learn to enjoy Monday mornings. It says right here, this too I see is from the hand of God. For without Him, without this understanding, who can eat or drink or find enjoyment? Who can be happy in this box without an understanding of who God is? And I think you can see that. People who are atheists, they're free. You're free from reality because you're trying to explain your existence in this box, tying into evolution and all kinds of, you know, materialistic things. That's like, it doesn't make sense, and you're going to get very, very frustrated because you can't find enjoyment unless you get this balance. God is out there. He's created the universe and placed you in here. You can study everything in the box. You can go everywhere in the box, but eventually you're going to get to a place that's like, I don't understand this. Or I just ran into the side. I just find out that we're in a box. What's that movie about that TV show? That guy was in a TV show. You know what I'm talking about? And his whole life was in a TV. The Truman Show. That's kind of what I'm talking about. You find out, it's like, I'm just a sitcom. Because it's like you just end up, this is fake. I mean, yeah. And it's not fake. But it is like that. There's someone outside God who's designed us to live in here. Now, there's a game, but it's not the game we see. There's a bigger game. I think in the New Testament, we find out more about the game. We're talking about rulers and authorities, powers, and we're living our lives as a demonstration of the glory of God in this box, living for Jesus Christ. I mean, again, I don't want to make this too, you know, what we'd call it, you know, fatalistic. Okay, verse 26. So you've got one of two choices. You find yourself in this box. If you get the right perspective, you can eat, you can drink, and you can enjoy your life knowing, hey, there's something bigger happening. I just don't know what it is. All things work together for the love of those who love the Lord. What's that mean? It doesn't mean I understand everything, but I do understand this promise. All things work together for the good of those who love the Lord. So I'm going to live my life. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to enjoy vacation. I'm going to enjoy what I eat. And I'm going to do it to the glory of God. Why'd that happen? I don't know. Why is it like this? I don't know. But in the end, it will all make sense. And it will work out to my benefit if I just stick with God. So that's the idea. Now, verse 26 gives you the two options when you find yourself in this box, in this board game. To the man who pleases him... And I'm going to assume to the man who pleases him, in the book of Hebrews and other places, that's the man with faith. In this case, it's the man who, I think, if you'll let me flatter myself, understands what I've just explained. You're in a box. You're in creation. You've got to live in that box knowing God's out. So the man who pleases Him, you're going to get up every day knowing, I don't understand, but I'm going to go to work. I don't understand why it's like this, but I'm going to keep doing what's right. If I do what's right, sometimes doing the right thing ends up coming back and haunting you. You treat people fair, they're supposed to treat you fair back. It may not work that way. So what are you going to do? Well, you're going to continue to be just. You're going to continue to be fair. But it would be better if you would be unjust, if you would cheat. You maybe would get ahead if you cheated. But that's immoral. So to please God would have to be having faith in what God wants you to do. And so watch this. To the man who pleases Him, God gives wisdom and knowledge for living in the box and happiness or contentment. To the man who, that's what Paul says. If we have food and clothing and we have contentment, that's what God wants. Just be content with what you have. And that's what he's saying right there. God will give you wisdom and knowledge so that you'll be content where you're at and find happiness. But to the sinner, now the sinner would be the one who I would think, you could say that lives immoral, but I think before they live immoral, they're the ones who are going to reject the concept of God. They're the ones who are going to try and beat the system. They're going to try to cheat in the board game. To the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over. Oh, so you're going to cheat all the way through your life. Yes, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to get more than everybody else. Do you realize it's monopoly money? It's like, no, it's real. This is the most, I've rejected the concept of God, and I'm just going to get more and more and more. Okay, now to the man who pleases God, he's going to enjoy his life. He's going to use his wisdom and knowledge to live honorably before God, and God will give him happiness in this life, and then he dies and goes off into eternity. But the man who lives as a sinner and rejects God, he's going to get caught up in the board game. He's going to make money, more money. He's going to cheat. He's going to deceive. He's going to get more and more and more. He's going to get ahead. He's going to win the board game. And then he dies. And he goes off into eternity and leaves behind a big stack of Monopoly money for the next player. So it's like, did he enjoy life? Really, he's the one who lived in vanity trying to win the game. That doesn't matter. It's the game that no one's keeping score of. Yeah, right now we're counting dollar bills, but in eternity, there's something bigger being kept score. Two games. There's the game you see that people get caught up in, and there's the game that in the end, you're going to have the final score. And the things that we're counting in this game are not being counted in this game. So, here it is again, verse 26. The man who pleases him, God gives wisdom and knowledge in order to how to live the life, play the game, but then the ability to be happy in his vanity of running on that treadmill. Because why? This is what God's assigned me to do. But to the sinner who tries to win the game down here, reject God, reject morality, what are you doing? Well, okay, yeah, you won, but all you did was gather up and store wealth to hand it over to one who does please God, because you're going to die and someone's going to receive this. This too, he says, is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Okay, I'm repeating a lot of things from last week or reviewing them. Now, this next chapter 3, going up to, say, verse, say, 17 or so, is there's a time for everything. Because in this game on the earth, see, we got this, we're living in this box. And in this box, there's going to be some things that are unfair. There's things that don't work out. And in this right here, he's going to say, there's a time for everything. And sometimes it happens in the box. Sometimes you see people get treated, you know, they do a certain crime and they get the right penalty. But sometimes the criminals win. But there's a time coming. Well, look over here in verse 9. What does the worker gain from his toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on men. Once again, getting up and working every day. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Meaning time is not confined to the box. Again, I think time is something we have, we can measure in the box. But there is eternity. There's time out that we go into another dimension of time at least. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. In other words, we don't understand the beginning or the end, the things that we don't live in, but we do understand that there's going to be something to come and balance out the unfair. There's going to be judgment day. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live. So in other words, now he's added to the concept of using wisdom and knowledge and enjoying life. He's now added the concept, since we know that there's eternity in our hearts, we don't understand it, but we know that there's something else. We're going to be judged after the box is done. We're going to be judged for what we did in a bigger game. So what you should do is, this is your argument for being good, for being moral. He's not saying continue to live in sin. He's not even talking about living wickedly. He's talking about trying to understand this box. So, yeah, I'll read this again, verse 12. I know that there's nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in his toil. This is a gift from God. Once again, to find a balance in this confusing, meaningless, unfair world, if you can find God and find a balance while you're living in the box, this is a gift from God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing be taken away. God does it so that men will revere him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before. And here's the point. And God will call the past to account. So in this box, if you're being treated unfair or others are treating you unfair, you continue to do good because you understand God's concept. And God will someday call this to account, because there's a time for everything under the sun, even a time where the unfair is made fair. Today may not be the day of your justice. Today may not be the day that you're treated fair. Today may not be the day that you receive your due reward. There's a time for everything, and that time is beautiful. In other words, it will be fair in the right time, which is nothing more than talking about in eternity. Next point. Now, this was talking about time, and I've already started talking about fair here, but there's a right time, and you may have to wait for eternity. In verse 16, and I saw something else under the sun. Now, I kind of got into that already, this other part of this verse here, by talking about being unfair. What's the other thing besides the right time? Things don't always seem to be in the right place at the right time. He says that there will be. Now he says, I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In other words, the judge that was supposed to be treating people fairly was wicked. He was being bribed. He was manipulating the situation. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I thought in my heart, God will bring to judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be, notice, a time for every activity, a time for every deed. So again, that ties the concept of the right time and judgment into these concepts right here. A verse I mentioned last week, a very important verse, I think, is verse 19 of chapter 3. And I think you got to be careful with this, because you can get, again, you can see where I'm going with this book. You see the trend I'm on. If you're going back through this and talking about the writer being very sinful, and he talks about, well, I built great projects, I try to find, you know, have the nicest house. I try to find all the pleasure. Anything my heart desires, I did it. So he's must be drinking all kinds of alcohol and shooting up with all kinds of drugs and living a completely immoral life. It's like, okay, you can go that way, but I think you're going the wrong way. This is not about Solomon pursuing sin. This is about Solomon pursuing the ends of his understanding, I think. And so that, meaning, it keeps it wholesome. And that's important, because when you get to verse 19, I'm going to read this verse, and you can see how this goes a couple different ways. In fact, I've got some notes written by it from other times I've heard it taught, or things I've taught it. But anyway, man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animal. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from the dust, and all to the dust, all return. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, who really knows? If the spirit of man rises upward, and if the spirit of the animal goes down back into the earth. Now, what he's talking about here is what you see in the box. Now, you can attack this, and I have before. Well, see, that's evolution. We know because of the scriptures that man is created in God's image. We know that God breathed the breath of life into man, and Jesus died on the cross to redeem man. He didn't die on the cross to redeem the cockroaches. Man is the God's crowning creation. Okay, we know that. So you can attack and say, see, Solomon's confused. He thinks man is just like an animal, that they both come from the dust and then they both die. And we don't know if man goes up and an animal, we don't know these things. So he's confused. He needs to come to my Bible class. I probably not. I think what he's saying is just what he says. Is in this box, in this game of life, man's fate is like that of the animals. You're born, you live, you eat, you sleep, you deal with what you have in the box, what God has assigned to you to do. If you're a bird, you fly around and try and find food all day. That's what a bird does all, apparently, I mean, I'm not assigned, but they eat little bits of, they can't eat like a steak meal because they just lay on the ground. They get little bits of food, so they got to constantly be eating because they can't take too much in, and they got to have energy to fly to the next tree to get the next berry. And I mean, I guess, you know, they just fly around and eat. That's their life. Okay, so that's not bad enough. The life of a worm. What's a worm? I mean, what are you doing? Worm, what are you doing? I tell you what the worm's doing. He's embracing. He's not trying to be an elephant. He's a worm, and he's embracing it. He's doing a mosquito. You ever seen a lazy mosquito? It's like, they're active, man. I'm all over this. I've got 24 hours to drink as much blood as I can, and then I die. And it's like, why even try? 24 hours, you're out. Just go watch a video or something. I mean, go do something. Go fly around the light or something. But they're just biting everything, you know, whatever. It's like, why? Because that's their fate. They are doing what God has assigned. And the same thing he's saying, man's fate is like that of an animal. The same fate awaits them both. In the box. And what happens? At the end of your time, you die and you leave the box. As one dies, so dies the other. He's not being negative. He's not being hopeless. He's not preaching evolution. He's preaching reality in the box. Man, face it. You are just like an animal. You're made out of dust. You come to life and you live. And at the end of your life, you die. And that's, you know, as much as an animal. Well, we can do math. Okay, right. But animals can do some. I've seen some squirrels do some pretty impressive things in my backyard, jumping from tree to tree. In fact, I watch them, and I'm fairly impressed. I watch the gymnasts in the Olympics, and I'm impressed with that. But you see some of the things the squirrels do? They would get gold every time at the Olympics. So it's not like, well, we're so much, well, we can do math. Yeah, well, they can jump and flip from tree to tree. Have you tried that? It's like, if I can just walk up and down the stairs without tripping, I'm happy. So again, this is not a comparison. So, you know, like, well, man is better. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. We all breathe in and out. We all have got blood in our system to some extent. Man has no advantage over the animal. Again, in this box. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place and all come from the dust and to dust return. Now, he asks a question right here. Well, no, we believe that man goes up. How do you know man goes up into eternity? How do you know this? Well, because, well, our Christian theology teaches it. But his point is, I've never seen it. When I've seen an animal die, they fall to the ground. And I've seen men die, and they fall to the ground. And what just happens then? Well, he's gone into... How do you know? You didn't see it. I mean, that's his point. Now, I've got theology, and I can argue for the resurrection. I can argue for eschatology. I can give you that whole argument. But him studying and trying to understand and do all of his research and travel, where every time he's seen an animal die, they just stop moving. They're dead. A man dies, stop moving, they're dead. It's like, they look just like an animal. I mean, it's like, and his point right here is, there's no advantage. Verse 22, so I saw that there is nothing better for a man than to enjoy his work, because that is his lot. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? In other words, it goes back to the box. Just like the squirrel jumps from tree to tree, the birds run around and fly around and get all their food, the mosquitoes bite, we get up on Monday mornings, we go to work, or whatever you're investing your money in, you live and you die, you are doing the same thing an animal does. And that, it's like, well, that's not a very Christian attitude. No, that's exactly the Christian attitude, because God made the animals to do what they do. He even assigned boundaries to the sea, says you can't come any closer than this. We talk about global warming. If they cross those boundaries, it's because God says, okay, it's time, cross the boundaries. Even the waves and the wind obey Him. Jesus demonstrated that. So the waves obey Him, the winds obey Him, the animals find their place in life and do what they're supposed to. And now man, you're just like that. Would you get in step with creation and stop being frustrated? Just because you can think and wonder about things, you can get so far out there that you lose touch with your reality in the box and your life becomes meaningless. For right here he says, there's nothing better for a man than to enjoy his work, because that is his lot. And that's a very Christian state. Well, I think we should be doing more of that. Well, okay, when we get in the New Testament, we find out there's life, we understand more. We've got a commission to go into all the world, and we're teaching and things as far as what we're called to do as a church. But as far as the man, under God, in His creation, do what you're supposed to do and enjoy it and stop being so frustrated with this false philosophy. Okay, verse chapter 4. Okay. Basically, what we've got right here is, again, I looked and saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. So he's still stuck on this, or going to come back to this ideal of oppression. And basically, I think the point of this is right here, is if the world is oppressive, you don't turn to being immoral or cheating or doing deceitful things to try and beat the system, but you can take knowledge that you have gained, and you can start playing the odds. You can start using it and say, okay, there is oppression. I'm going to lose in the end. I'm going to die in the end. Okay, with that being established, we're going to take knowledge and apply it to the oppression and start playing the odds. We're going to start trying to increase our chances of winning against the oppression. Here we go, chapter 4. Again, I looked and saw oppression. I saw the tears of the oppressed. They had no one to comfort them. The power was on the side of their oppressors. They have no comforter. Now, I'm going to run over to verse 9, for example, and give you, here's where you start seeing the ideal of betting, or not betting, but playing the odds. For example, if this is the case, and you're living in a world of oppression, two are better than one, because they will have a good return for their work. So instead of going it alone into oppression, why don't you find a partner and you two partner up and make a deal with each other, say like get married or something, or you know, business partners or something, and go at the oppressive world together. So in other words, instead of doing it alone, two are better than one. You're taking knowledge, increasing your odds of being successful against the same oppression everybody faces. Well, this advantage and this advantage. Right, there are groups in the world that have got better odds. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Pity the man who didn't look at this oppressive world and use knowledge and say, I better get a friend in case I stumble. Just rejected knowledge and got to those that God pleases God, to those with faith, to those who please God, he gives them what? He gives them knowledge. And part of that knowledge is get some life insurance. Part of that knowledge is get some auto insurance. Part of that knowledge is get a skill, get a friend, get a family, buy a house, invest your money. Oh, no, I'm going to. What are you going to do? You're going to face oppression. But if you've got a job, if you've got an education, if you've got a skill, if you've got some auto insurance, the car accident, I mean, you've all been in situations on both sides. There's been times where a flat tire was a disaster for me because it's like I didn't have a spare. One time, our tire iron, I found it in the spring in the school parking lot because it was six kids getting in and out, jumping. I mean, when we got out of the van, we went to school, we got out of the van, it looked like a school bus unloading out the windows. And they jumping out the back, they jump out the sliding door, they get out the front door, and they drag their bags, and the kids, something falls out, well, it's not mine, and they go into school. And in the spring, well, I had a flat tire. Oh, I could tell you stories. I could tell you stories. Oh, my goodness. This would be a long story. Basically, we came down to West Des Moines to follow God's will to work in a Christian school that paid me way less than I was getting paid at a public school, and I also was pastoring a church. So I took, like, a huge cut. I mean, like, I was making 25% of what I was making. Moved to West Des Moines and bought a house. Okay, right, but okay. No knowledge, okay? You decreased your income and picked up a house payment in West Des Moines. Okay, so we had a van, got repossessed because we couldn't make the payments. I mean, when, you know, we don't have money, can't make payments. So they came and took away, we left it with an old white van that didn't have a heater in it, that didn't blow air up on your dashboard. I got six kids in school. And so when you drove in the winter, you had to keep your windows rolled down in the winter. Otherwise, your windows would frost over on the inside. The kids had to breathe outside. It's like, well, so what do you do? You just realize I wasn't very knowledgeable. But you keep moving. So I started working at nights at AARP, answering phones, filling medical orders until 9 o'clock. We'd get up in the mornings at 4 o'clock, deliver the morning registers. We're pulling in $10 every morning. Getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, delivering papers, and made 10 bucks. That's where we were. That's where we were at, okay? And we answered. Now, Christmas morning, it's Christmas morning. It's supposed to be that holiday, the joyful time of year. Everyone's happy. It's a large paper on Christmas morning, but everybody's the average. So it's 1 o'clock. We get up at 1 o'clock on Sundays and holidays because the papers are huge. And driving the white van with the windows down. And of course, you dress warm. And I have a flat tire. A flat tire. I think I hit a chunk of ice. And boom! It's flat. I got a spare tire. I'm not stupid. I've got a flat tire. Or I've got a spare tire. But I get everything out on the side of the road. Christmas morning, already mad. Kids are freezing. And I can't find the little tire iron. Can't find it. I mean, where did it go? I don't have it. So it's like, and now it's 7 o'clock and people are meeting you at the door. Merry Christmas. It's like, if you ever wanted to say some kind of profanity back to someone that says Merry Christmas, you're walking through the snow, here's your paper. Merry Christmas. They're drinking hot chocolate, they're jammies, the kids came back and it's like, oh, I still got 2 hours of papers to deliver. It's like, and I got a flat tire. And it's like, it's just, oh, you know, it's just, I'm not exaggerating, but I'm telling you more than you want to know. Okay, so finally, I tell the kids, start walking home. Just go home with mom and walk home. I'll finish the paper out, and you guys can open your presents. At least salvage something from Christmas Day. And I mean, this is one of those glorious times. All the boys are little. And, well, you know, there were a couple of them in high school. So I deliver the papers, and I'm driving from stop to stop. I'd get out and do a block or something with a flat tire. It's kind of like, forget it. It's flat. It's I don't know what to do. I got to move. I can't carry the paper, so I'm just driving. So I finished the paper out, and I'm coming down Ashworth. Christmas morning. There's very little traffic. I mean, almost zero traffic. And I'm driving, boom, 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 on a flat tire. I'm on a flat tire. It's like, I don't care. And people are driving out the honk, beep, beep, and they point. You've got a flat. I mean, it's like, listen, if someone's driving 25, 30 miles an hour with a flat tire, they know they've got a flat tire. You don't need a honk. Beep, beep. You're tired. Like, what? I just thought that was the bass on the radio. It's like boom, 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 boom. So I went home. I started walking down the street. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just walking down the street trying to hope I'd find knock on someone's door. And as I walked by someone's garage, I could see a tire iron on the back of their garage door. I have no idea who this person is. Knock on the door. Hi. I live down the street about 2 blocks. I've got a flat tire. And I would really like to borrow your tire iron. And so, you know, it's like, how do you know I've got it? Oh, I could, you know, so I brought it back. Now, what was the point of that whole story? There's...
It's meaningless.
It's meaningless. But I was going to tell you a story about the wisdom and the negative. That was an example of being somewhere here. Unfair. Oh my gosh! That was way too much of a story. But there's a story that goes on the other side of how. Well, maybe I'll think of it here. I'm sorry. But, I mean, and that's a true story. The boys will remember that story. Tony will remember that story. What's that? Ben would have been in fifth or sixth grade. Yep. And he was. They would get up. They would get up every morning with me and deliver papers. You know? Oh, that's what I was going to say. Then in the spring, we pull in the parking lot in the spring, and I went into school, and someone there's a tire iron sitting against the secretary, the front office where you know you walk in the entrance there. And I go, what's that? They go, that was laying in the parking lot because the snow melted. And now we know who dropped the tire iron. The boys dragging their bags out, apparently, just drug it out, falls in the snow. Who cares? I mean, what's that good for? And they went in. And I got my tire iron back, but it was like 3 months too late. Yeah, we did. Oh, there's the, okay. I got to get. Well, we learn some things. You learn some things, and that was where we. That's an example. I'm tying this into this. I wasn't playing the odds. I didn't use knowledge. I was following God, I think, but I wasn't playing the odds, and we just got. Yeah. Well, let's go back to this. Something about playing. Okay. Verse 9. We're talking about there's oppression, and oppression can be, person to person. It can be life to person. It can be just the way, like, oh, I know. I was talking about insurance or AAA or something. And sometimes a flat tire is not a big deal. That's what I was saying. Because I've had flat tires before, and you have too, where you got a flat tire, you pull off the side of the road, you jack it up, you spin it off, you're talking, you're showing your boys how to do it, pop it, this is how Daddy changes the tire. Put it back on. Wow, Daddy, you're so smart. Yeah, I'm a shop teacher. Put it back in, take the jack off, put it all back. You always put it back in here, tighten everything back down so it's real neat. We'll get that fixed and drive in. You always want to get it fixed. You don't want to drive without a spare. It took you 5 minutes. It's like, not a big deal because you had planned ahead. I mean, you had, in that case, I had a tire iron. But you pull a tire iron out of the situation when you have a flat tire, it messes up weeks of time. If you have a tire iron, you're the hero. If you have no tire iron, you're cursing at people on Christmas morning delivering them their papers, and you're a jerk. It's like, why? Because of a tire iron. And so that's kind of what I'm saying, is you play the odds. That's all he's saying here when he talks about the next thing he gives an example in verse 11. Also, if two lie down together, they'll be kept warm, but how can one keep one warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. And then he adds, and a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. If two are better than one, now you've got three. Now again, in that situation, you want to go back to, fortunately, I had a good wife. I had kids that would, cooperate with me. And so we made it through that time. That was a long, long time ago. That was last year. No. That whole chapter there is the oppression and the toil, is the importance of having and playing kind of the odds, of anticipating. Since you know you're playing this game in this box, sometimes we have flat tires, sometimes your air conditioner goes off, sometimes things happen. Sometimes you need medical bills. If you just pretend none of that's going to happen, you're not using knowledge, and oppression is going to get you. But if you use your knowledge, you place your bets, you hit the odds, you're going to have. Let me go to an example of this way at the end of the book. Here, go to chapter 11, verse 1. Chapter 11, verse 1. And here's another example. We're going to get into many of these things right here, but chapter 11, verses 1, 2, and 3. It's one of those verses that people don't know what it means. It says, "Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it again. Give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. If clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or not," now I get some other things. But they're basically verses 1, 2, and 3. But the idea there is cast your bread upon the waters. The waters are an investment. The bread is your money. You eat bread. That's what you work for. You work for bread, so the bread is representing money. The waters represent, you throw it out in the water. What always happens when you throw something into the sea? What does it do? It comes back to you. It always washes back in. You throw it out there. Now, if it's a rock, it'll take many, many years. But if you throw trash out there, it'll eventually come right back to the shore. And so right here, cast your bread upon the waters. Indeed, take your bread. Don't. The New Testament talks about the same thing. Paul says the same thing. Don't eat the seed. Don't eat your bread. You're going to want to give some of it away. Now, this gets prosperity teachers take this and go off the rails with this. But there's a point to, in this case, he's talking about investments. He's not talking about giving to a ministry or a church. He's talking about casting your bread upon the waters. But don't just throw some bread here and wait for it to come back. Because he says, for after many days, you'll find it again. You throw it out there, it's going to come back. Just you throw some trash out there, just keep walking around the shore, that will eventually come back. The same way with investments. You throw investments out. Someday, along that shore, that investment's going to come back. So if that's the case, don't just throw out one, verse 2. Give portions to seven. Yes, eight. What the heck? Seven or eight? Just throw it out in several investments. For you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. In other words, you don't know what investment is going to work. Now, that doesn't mean, play crazy stock market games and be careless with your money. But in other words, don't just put all of your, what do you say it? cookies in the same pan or your eggs in the same, yeah. I mean, in other words, cast your bread on the water. And that's the same thing. Plate, instead of just throwing bread over here or casting an investment here, have seven investments. Have eight investments because you're playing the odds. Get a friend. Get two friends. Have someone with you. Invest your money. Why? Because the world is oppressive. So I'm just going to trust God. This is trusting God. He's right here. You are in an oppressive world. You're in this box. It's like, well, God will save me. He put you in the box like an animal. You're going to have to survive in the box. Well, I'll just believe God will take care of me. There's no verse in the Bible that says just trust God. You understand what I'm saying? It does say trust God. You understand what I'm saying? But I mean, I lived that way. I went to Tulsa in 1985 just trusting God. I can tell you another whole series of stories. Just going to trust God. First thing I learned is God doesn't move just because you say, I'll just trust God. What are you, like Elijah on Mount Sinai, what are you doing here? I came down to talk to you. It's like, aren't you supposed to be back? It's like, you don't make the rules, son. Well, I'm trusting you, God. Yeah, and I gave you some things to do, and it wasn't just come down here and find me on Mount Sinai. It's like, and I began to realize the whole just trust God and pray a prayer of faith and everything will work out. It's like, it'll work out, but it's going to take some discipline, son, to get you back on track because you're an idiot. And so you understand what I'm saying? There's the idea of trusting God, but there's also the ideal of making investments, finding a partner in life, maybe two or three people, using, because the world, the box that God has put you in, who cursed it? Paul answers that question. Who cursed the earth? Who put the earth under a curse? That evil Satan. Read your Bible. God cursed it. God created the box. It went into sin. He curses it. So we are living in a cursed world that is oppressive. Well, I think if we all just get along. Oh, don't be stupid. It's an oppressive world. If someone wants you just to get along and give you all their money, just trust this, it's like, you're not playing the odds. You can't just trust everything. There's deception in the world. There's oppression in the world. Someone's trying to win this Monopoly game, and they're going to crush you in the process. If it's weather patterns, if it's government, if it's mistakes or accidents you have, a little bit of knowledge. God gives you knowledge. So those who please Him, He gives what? Knowledge and happiness. So here's your knowledge. Two are better than one. And casting your bread on the water will come back. So cast it seven, maybe eight times. So you're going to have someone to help you when you fall. And you're going to have investments coming back over here. And now, and it's coming, when oppression comes, you can whip it. Why? With faith in God. No, the reason you're following this is because of your faith in God. Faith in God was one that says, okay, here's the situation. I'm in this box. I've got to live in this box. I'm just going to go out here and live in the spiritual realm. It's like, that's not what the Bible says. The Bible says, you're in the box. You don't understand these things. So get in the box. You're like an animal and make it work. I'm going to give you some knowledge. And if you follow my knowledge, I'll give you some happiness while you're doing it. It's like, and I listen, you say, well, that's not very spiritual. It is. For me, that is the... I wish I would have understood that when I was 20, 21, 22, 25. Anyway, any questions on that? I'm going to quit. I didn't get much further than I did last week. The people think that he was old. So, I mean, he... Mm-hmm. Yeah, this wasn't written by a 20-year-old. You know, I mean... We even talked about who wrote it. I mean, it may not even have actually been Solomon who wrote it. It may have been someone who was writing memoirs for Solomon. You know, it's Solomon's story, but it's the guy that calls the assembly. So again, it's I think it's definitely Solomon's material, Solomon's wisdom. It may have been written even after Solomon had died. His memoirs are putting it. Again, that's complete speculation, but it's definitely got to do with Solomon. But who that Koheleth was, we talk about, that may have been somebody else. But this, you know, and we know it's at the end of his life, and you know the verses. Where is it at? Chapter 12, verse 1. And I mean, this is the conclusion. I mean, this book is filled with, there's really no place for where Solomon is going. He has gone off track. We know from the historical accounts that Solomon went off track. But this book is not talking from a position of someone off, and I used to think of that way sometimes. This man's off track. He's thrown at you false philosophies like evolution. That verse on evolution wasn't evolution. That was on, you're in the box just like an animal. live your life. Now, and I think throughout this, he keeps bringing you back to, you need to be good. God will give you happiness. Accept your place in life. And then right here, chapter 12, verse 1. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come. Trouble, in this case, old age. And the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. And some of us have begun to experience that more and more. It's like getting Monday mornings are a lot harder to get out of bed. Sometimes Tuesdays and Wednesdays are just like a Monday. Like just every day is like a Monday. Rainy days and Mondays always get me down. But anyway, I find no pleasure in the days will come when you say, I find no pleasure in them. I think that's talking about a place in life, a year, meaning you're an old man. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark. That's not talking about the day of the Lord when the sun disappears. That's talking about when your eyesight, it's like you can't see real well. And the clouds return after the rain. In other words, sometimes the clouds blow in and it rains, and then the clouds and you got some blue skies. At this time in life, the clouds blow in, it rains, and the clouds blow in and it rains, and the clouds blow in. It's just like one rain after another. It's not like, well, that was a storm. It's like, well, we got some good weather coming. Nope, here comes another storm. It's just, there's just problem, miseries of old age return day after day after day. When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, the keepers of the house would be the legs, would be the arms, and the strong men stoop. That's the legs. When the grinders cease because they are few. That's not hard to figure out. What grinds the food? The teeth, and there's only two or three of them left. Again, remember, we're in a dentist's office, and we've got good dental hygiene. Imagine a world where you'd live 80, 90 years without, you know, six-month cleanings or without toothpaste, without floss. So, I mean, it's just another whole world. And those looking through the windows grow dim. Who's looking through the windows? Your eyes. When the doors in the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades. When I go out on my deck, I can hear the katydids or the locusts. And so when he goes down the streets, the doors are, it seems like it's all the doors are closed. Nothing's open. I can't hear anything. You can tell when I'm running, I don't want to say I always do, but sometimes I don't even look for cars. I'll get hit by a car tomorrow. Because you just know there's no one coming. Why? I can hear there's no one coming. I still sometimes look, but sometimes I find myself anticipating because I can hear there's no one coming. There's no car coming. Again, I shouldn't put it on, you know, that was my insurance policy. But in this way, here, the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades. When men rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint. In other words, you rise up when the birds start singing. You're up early because you can't sleep. But it wasn't the birds that woke you up. I couldn't even hear the birds. So in other words, verse 4 is about losing hearing. When men are afraid of heights, you know, and they are unstable, and the dangers of the streets. Like what dangers in the street? Curbs. You know, it's not like, oh, there's bandits in the streets and criminals. No, there's curbs and those little sidewalk lips, you know, where the sidewalk's up about an inch, and boom. It's like broken a hip. It's over. It's like, again, never get out of the nursing home now. I mean, it's like when you're afraid of heights and there's dangers in the streets, life-ending dangers, like what? A curb. And the almond tree blossoms, hair, and the grasshopper drags himself along. The same legs that used to jump around the yard as a kid and all the way through teenage years, and all of a sudden now they're just dragging the old man across the yard. And desires no longer stirred. You read Song of Songs? That's what that is. Desire. Sexual desire. No longer stirred. The man goes to his eternal home. The mourners go about the streets. Remember him before the silver cord is severed. It appears the silver cord is some kind of in the nervous system. Some would even say the spinal cord. Or the golden bowl is broken. The silver cord connecting to the brain. The golden bowl is broken. Before the pitcher is shattered at the spring. What's the pitcher at the spring? That's the beating heart. Or the wheel broken at the well. That's the muscles of the heart. Or the pitcher would be what transports the water. Or that'd be the blood vessels. The wheel broken at the well would be the muscle of the heart. And dust returns to ground it came from. And the spirit returns to God who gave it. Now, right there's your answer. Does Solomon believe the spirit goes to God? Yes, he does. But when he's doing experiments and he's measuring, he says, I don't know if a spirit, soul of an animal goes up or a man goes, I don't know where they go. They drop dead. But now his faith, I mean, his understanding of you know, the afterlife is the spirit goes to be with God. In other words, what he's saying is, before you get to those days, make sure you remember. Because this right here, and again, I've said this before, and we'll have to wrap this up. This, I think, is the final test of man, right here. There's all kinds of tests, losing tire irons, all kinds of problems in life. But this right here is the final test of man. You are now, you're not even able to look for the tire iron. You can't even change the tire. It's just like, this is your last test. Yeah, you think you've struggled so far with all your tests? Here's the big semester test right here. And so it says, remember your Creator back then, because you're going to want to know Him. In these days, you're going to want to be very familiar with the Creator who put you in this box like an animal so you can live by faith, because it looks like it's not good. I mean, meaningless, says the teacher, everything is meaningless. And again, I don't think that means in the context of there's no hope. It's like you're limited, so you're going to die just like this. So make sure you don't live your life chasing things that are meaningless, but instead focus on what you do know. I always cheer personally, you know, and again, it sounds morbid, I suppose, but I always, you know, talk to Tony about, I always look forward to that day when I'm out mowing the yard, the sunshine, my shirt's off, I'm out mowing the yard, and all of a sudden, Grandpa's fell down. It's like, Grandpa had a heart attack. He went to be with Jesus. It's like, what a way to go. It's like you're mowing the yard one day out in the sunshine, boom! Well, got a funeral in 3 days. It's like, well, wasn't that sad? No, that was not sad. That took that whole chapter and reduced it to about 4 minutes. It's like, again, we've all had those thoughts, I'm sure. But anyway, that is kind of a negative note, I'm sorry. And you can correct my teaching and, you know. But you pray about life. You know, you pray about life. You pray about, you know, things in life. You know, this is the day that's coming. You know, God will meet you there. God will meet you. God will be there. It's the last great test. It's good to know Him before you get to that point and know how He'll respond and what He's got planned for you. All right, well, with that miserable. Well, what do you expect from Ecclesiastes? What do you expect? All right. Father, we do come to you tonight in the name of Jesus. We do thank you for the good things you've done for us in life, the things you presented to us. We ask that we would have faith, that we would trust you, that we would look to you and accept our lot in life as far as where you place us as humans. But Father, that we would continue to look for the hope you also give us in the resurrection, that we live our lives faithfully to you at this time. Not trying to cheat or steal or lie and manipulate situations, but living an honest, good life before you. Father, we do thank you again for the tests you bring us, and ask that you'd empower us to pass those tests and to rise to the occasion, to learn from those tests, to be trained by those tests, to become the people you've called us to be. Again, we thank you for this opportunity. In Jesus' name, amen. Man, I always want to say thank you for coming, and I always want to say, if you don't come back, I understand. But it is not, I do appreciate you coming out. Thank you very much.